Take a couple of good long, deep in and out breaths. All the way down through the torso. You can even imagine it going all the way down to your feet. Notice where you feel the breathing process most clearly. When you focus on the breath, that's what we're focusing on, not so much the air coming in on through the nose. Because as the breath gets very subtle, you reach a point where you can't feel the air. But there's still a movement of energy in the body. So focus there, and then ask yourself, is it comfortable? Is it what your body needs right now? If you're feeling tired, what kind of breathing will give you more energy? If you're feeling tense, what kind of breathing will relax you? You can experiment with shorter breathing, deeper, more shallow, heavier, lighter, faster, slower. Breathe in a way that feels really good right now. What parts of the body are very sensitive to the breathing process? In the sense that when you breathe in, it feels good right there. Focus your attention there. See if you can maintain that sense of sensitivity being satisfied. It's an important part of the concentration to have a topic that you're focused on or a sensation that you're focused on that feels really good. A place where the mind can settle in and feel comfortable. Because you're going to need to stabilize the mind, and that mind is not going to be stable if it's not feeling a sense of pleasure. Because the reason it's so unstable is it tries to feed on things. Feed on your emotions, feed on other people's words. Feed on your image of yourself, all kinds of things that the mind tends to feed on when it's dissatisfied, when it feels hungry. So we're teaching ourselves to feed in a new way. Feed on the parts of the body that are sensitive to the breath and make them satisfied. And when you can do that, then you give the mind a place where it can step back from itself. I talk about the mind being like a committee. We want one of the members of the committee to be an observer, an impartial, unbiased observer. Slightly skeptical. That was one of the qualities I noticed about John Fuang. He was quite a skeptic. Not being cynical, but more skeptical. Waiting to pass judgment. Not jumping to quick conclusions. After all, if you're going to get past your own defilements, you have to be skeptical of them. Greed will tell you one thing, anger will tell you something else, delusion will tell you something else. Sometimes they all get together and tell you the same thing, but they're all telling you things that may not be good for you. And if those are the only voices you have in your mind, you go with them. Or are we giving you another voice? A voice that says, wait a minute. Are these things really true, what they're telling you? And if you have a sense of well-being with the breath, then it's a lot easier to step back and take that as your foundation. So that the hunger of your greed and the hunger of your aversion and the hunger of your delusion are not quite so strong. Then you can question them. These moods of ours. All too often we tell ourselves that this is what we really feel about something and we want to get in touch with our emotions. That's because we've been estranged from them. And we somehow think that if we get to know them really well, then we can trust them. Well, no. They're just habits like everything else that goes through the mind. And sometimes they're pretty bad habits. But they feel natural, they feel like they're us because they're old habits. Then we're addicted to them. And part of addiction is in the sense that, one, there is some sort of gratification there, and two, there's a sense of compulsion. In other words, as you feel you have to do it that way. Sometimes that sense of compulsion is out of a sense of duty, that you have to think in a particular way, like when you're worried about things. you feel if you don't worry enough, you're not prepared for the future. And sometimes it's a lack of imagination. You can't think of anything else to do when you're feeling particularly out of sorts, ill at ease. And so you're just going back into your old habits. Well, the Buddha is teaching you some new habits. The whole point of the practice is that the mind can change. And we're talking about the mind here. It's not just your thinking apparatus. It's a whole complex of what we call heart and mind, or psyche in English, our feelings and our thoughts. Because there's no clear line between feelings and thoughts. A feeling is a thought basically that's gotten into your body. And we're talking about emotions, not the feeling tones that they talk about in technical Buddhist terminology. It's just more your emotions. They get into the body. And they feel very real because they have a bodily presence. One of the reasons we work with the breath is to burst through some of the constraints that our emotions put on our body, and also to give us a handle. When a particular emotion comes up and you feel that it's not healthy or it's not positive, not skillful enough, try breathing in a different way. Breathe in a way that helps pull you out of that vicious cycle of a thought that leads to a bodily sensation and a way of breathing, and a way of breathing that leads back to a thought and a feeling. This can help break the cycle. And then you can look at the broken bits as the emotion tries to reassemble itself. And ask yourself, well, why are you compelled to go with it? This is where having some knowledge of the Dharma can help. Because emotions are not just a raw feeling, they have their thoughts behind them as well. The way you talk to yourself, the things you focus on, the images you have in mind that are lurking behind a lot of the thoughts. You want to be able to see them. And part of the problem is that they come and go very quickly, especially the images that the Buddha calls perceptions. In other words, the labels you have in the mind. They're just isolated words or little visual images. They're like the subliminal images that they put on TV. They flash for a second, and they're flashed so quickly that your conscious mind doesn't see them, but there's something inside that picks them up. And so the best way to see those is to not fall along with them, question them. Say when you're feeling down and your mind is telling you all kinds of things, well, question it. Breathe in a way that feels good. Tell yourself, this emotion is not necessarily mine, it's just an old habit. I don't have to identify with it. And see what parts of the mind say, oh yes, you do. Learn to question them. Why? And first, they're not going to respond. They're used to having their way without having to explain themselves. But you have to be insistent. Why? Why believe that? Why go for that? And then they'll start explaining, well, this is the way things have to be. Well, no, they don't have to be that way. Challenge them again. Question your thoughts. Question your feelings. Hold them at arm's length for a bit. And see which parts of the mind want to grab them and hold tight to them. And eventually you'll see something in there that doesn't make sense. Now, part of that requires also that you change your sense of what makes sense. This is an important part of my training with the John Fuhr, living with someone who had a very different background. So things that I took for granted as being part of my culture, I took them so for granted, I thought they were universal truths about how the mind works. He'd question it. I'd explain a problem that was coming up in my mind, some memories of issues in the past. And explain it to him. Sometimes he would look at me as if I'd come from the other side of the world, which I had. But just that look made me realize that a lot of things I was taking for granted as to what's worthwhile in life, how I would measure myself, how I would look at myself, are all pretty arbitrary. The more you stay embodied in your culture, the less you see. You have to learn how to question things. The values of society. This is an important part of going into the wilderness. You get away from society. And it's good having kind of, even when you can't physically get away from society, try to have a wilderness mind. It learns to look at the values of the world. Things in terms of status, competition, praise, criticism. And ask yourself, to what extent is the opposite true? Where am I assuming things that don't have to be assumed? Where am I holding on to the things that make me suffer? Because that's the image the Buddha has. It's not that things come in to make us suffer. We go out and we grab hold of them, and then we're trapped. The image he has is of a fire. Back in those days, they believed that fire clung to its fuel. And when it went out because it let go. And when it let go, it was released. That's why they use the word nirvana for the goal, the fire that's released, because it lets go. In other words, it's not the fuel that's trapping the fire. It's the fire's own tendency to cling. It's a great image for the mind as it clings to certain ways of thinking, which get reinforced by living with other people who think exactly the same way. So even though you may not be able to step outside of America right now, or whatever country you're in, one of the reasons we have a monastic order is that it is kind of an alternative society with an alternative culture. The values are the ones that are set forth by noble ones. They say these values are really helpful. Just like having a subversive alternative culture here in our country that you can tap into. You can step out of the world outside. Into a bigger outside, the outside of a mind that's liberated, or people who live by the values set down by someone who's liberated. In which you find that you have a different identity, where you're not measured by your job or your family. You're measured by the way that you're generous, you're measured by the way that you're virtuous, you're measured by the care that you put into training your mind. These are different values entirely. And by measuring your generosity, it's not in terms of how much you give, but your willingness to give to things that you find inspiring. In terms of virtue, your ability to avoid harm to yourself and harm to other people. And above all, it's all about training the mind. And here there's no competition. We may see that other people seem to be more advanced in their concentration, but, well, that's their business. You measure yourself in terms of how much better your mind is than it was before you meditated. We had some difficult people at the monastery in Thailand. And one time I complained about one of them, and Jonathan Williams said, "You should have seen her before she meditated." In the past, as soon as she yelled at you, he said, there's a phrase in Thai, "bagwa murte," which means as soon as she yelled at you, she'd hit you. Now she just yelled. It was a step in the right direction. So you measure yourself against yourself in terms of qualities that really matter. Your basic goodness inside. It's a word that we don't hear much in our society. One time I checked on Amazon to just see what kind of books they had on goodness, and they were all recipe books. Baking goods. We measure goodness in terms of how much sweetness you can put into your mouth. Well, it's not the Buddha's goodness. The Buddha's goodness in terms of generosity, virtue, the training of the mind. That's what matters. And when you can live by those values, and when you go back, leave the monastery, go back to your daily life, try to carry a little bit of that wilderness mind with you, that mind that's shaped by the customs of the noble ones. Where contentment is a real value, contentment in material things, so that you can focus on developing good qualities in mind and abandoning unskillful qualities. That's what really matters. That's an area where the Buddha actually says you should be malcontent or discontent. In other words, if your skill as in training the mind has not gone to the point where you actually are beyond all suffering, well, there's more work to do, you keep at it. But it's a matter of learning how to focus on what's important, i.e. the training of the mind. As for other aspects of life, we'll focus on the ways in which you can make them part of training the mind, and all the good qualities that make the mind a mind that you can actually live with, a mind that's not creating trouble for itself. So the practice is all about stepping out. You get with the breath to step out of your own mind. You learn about the Dharma to step out of the assumptions of your society. And in stepping out, you become free.